healthy. Radio Addiction starts now.
Power to the people!
The Laura Ingraham Show.
It's Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham. This is your healthy radio addiction. And today is Freedom Friday, a very special Freedom Friday, because we are paying tribute, remembering, and thanking the men and women who gave their lives for our freedom. And we've got a great lineup for you today, so get ready to call in and share your thoughts with us. 855-40-LAURA. 855-40-LAURA. You can tweet Laura at Ingraham Angle, and you can reach me at BetsyMcCoy.com. What a lineup, beginning with the most perceptive pollster and public opinion strategist in America, John McLaughlin. He's going to tell us how Trump can win, how Trump can pull it out, and we will be Trumping today. We also have Sam Clovis, Trump's co-chairman of the national campaign, and he's going to be talking about Trump's new energy policy. We've got Congressman Louie Gohmert from Texas calling in to tell us about Zika on the border. And one of my favorites, let's face it, my all-time favorite, Ed Klein, chronicling the Clintons' crimes. There are so many. He writes volume after volume. But first, just a moment to talk about what my parents call Decoration Day and what we call Memorial Day weekend. This is a time to really thank the men and women, many of them just boys and girls, teenagers, the same age as the kids I had in my classroom for so many years. They acted older than their years, braver than anyone could expect, strapping gear on their backs and marching into fiery hell holes all across the world to protect us. And they didn't come back, leaving behind parents, brothers and sisters, sweethearts, and a nation that couldn't possibly express enough gratitude to them. Decoration Day, of course, began way back at the time of the Civil War, 1868. They chose the end of May because the flowers would be blooming everywhere, and they are coming out this year just as expected, just in time to celebrate these sacrifices. Decoration Day. The first big celebration was at Arlington National Cemetery. And I don't know whether you've ever been to a military cemetery. I've been to several, one in France, one in the Philippines, and of course Arlington. If you haven't, if you have a chance to go and to bring your children, don't miss it. It is one of the unforgettable experiences of life. The rows and rows and rows of white crosses and stars of David on the undulating hillsides, the silence, the serenity, the exquisite beauty of these cemeteries, and of course, what they stand for, the thousands and thousands and thousands of gravestones marking the sweep of history, the grandeur of a nation that defends freedom not only for itself, but for so much of the world. You will feel so proud. You will feel so moved to share with your children the meaning of this country if you stand at one of those cemeteries and look at those crosses. So enough about that. Now on to a very exciting guest, John McLaughlin. He is, as I said before, the smartest pollster and public opinion analyst in the country, and he's going to tell us how Trump can pull it out. Thank you, John.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you. And on Memorial Day for, you know, my dad, he's still alive, but I was born in Fort Dix. He was with the old Fighting 69th back during the 50s. But in the meantime, Donald Trump, a week ago Monday, we put out a survey that National Review Online published where the headline was the race is tightening, that Trump could win.
I've got it right in my hand now. I was thrilled to read about this.
Right. And for Memorial Day weekend, what was interesting to me about that is Trump was winning among veteran households, which are 36% of the country, 47 to 40. So that was an important group for him because Hillary was winning with those households that, you know, didn't have someone on active duty or a veteran in the household.
Well, wasn't Bill a draft dodger himself?
Well, I read about that. And then, and by the way, for those of us who like Nixon because he ended the draft, and I fortunately didn't have to go, but there's a lot of family, you know, you have a great deal of respect for those who serve this country. And, you know, it's, like you said, the tribute you paid in the beginning is great. But what I find interesting is those veterans and those active military households are with Trump. And in the survey that we had, in a way, it forecast that he was going to go into the lead, which since then there's been multiple surveys over the past week where he's Fox News and others had him slightly ahead. And the reason is because even though Hillary was trying to exacerbate his negatives, they're actually getting better. And the ABC Washington Post poll, which had him ahead over the weekend, last weekend, his negatives were down to a level of hers because we've known her for a long time. In this survey that we had, I mean, Hillary had she had a 56% unfavorable rating to only a 40% favorable rating.
Can you imagine living with a 56% unfavorable rating, even in your own household, your own town? She is so,
right.
As Ed Klein would say, unlikable.
Right. And the difference was her negatives hadn't changed. Mm. They're getting they've gotten worse over the years, and they're holding with the negative rating. Because if you ask Americans, what do you like least about her? 8 out of 10 Americans will say she's dishonest, she's a liar, she's corrupt, she's a crook. And they've known this about her for a long time, mm-hmm. where we're not talking about something that just came about. We're talking about something in the public national focus for 25 years. If you
yes.
go back to
all the way to Whitewater. Sure.
Right. And now they're reading stories about how she was Secretary of State selling access to via the Clinton Foundation to governments and foreign entities where, you know, the reason she didn't want those. And when your guest Ed Klein comes on, I think he's got a big focus on this. It's not just the fact that she violated security protocols and, you know, is guilty of what General Petraeus had a problem with. No, she was basically sending emails, personal emails, where she was doing business for the Clinton Foundation as Secretary of State. And there's certain positions that in this government that are so sensitive, whether it's defense, Secretary of State, Attorney General, Treasury, you're not even allowed to get involved in politics. You can't be the guest.
Much less wheel and deal with foreign nations.
Right, or allow,
Clinton Cash, which I saw a couple of weeks ago and which will be in the theaters later this summer, too bad they're waiting so long to release it, documents how she literally put the U.S. government up for sale.
Yeah, and she has serious negatives where among Hispanics, she's a 49% unfavorable. Among African Americans, 27 unfavorable. Among Democrats, she's a 25 unfavorable. She's got big negatives in her base. And everybody's looking at, Bernie Sanders still hanging in there. He's still winning primaries. Well, Bernie Sanders, you know, is a 74-year-old socialist from Vermont. It's not, you know, it's an anti-Hillary vote. It's basically he's the choice of not Hillary. So the Democrats have a Hillary-not-Hillary contest going on inside their party. And the Republicans, we've consolidated around Trump. And what Trump realizes is that 90% of all Republicans are unfavorable to Hillary. So all this stuff about uniting the party and him reaching out, it isn't about Trump. He's the candidate that has to stop Hillary Clinton. So all of a sudden, his positives are rising. His negatives are going away, where he's moving himself into a position where he can beat her, and he's now ahead of her in these polls. And if he keeps going ahead of her in these polls, I'll bet you President Obama indicts her.
I wanted to ask you how the electorate is going to react to Trump's particular style of campaign. I have to tell you, I am tickled to see him raising issues like Paula Jones, Whitewater, Filegate, Travelgate, Cattle Futures, Mark Rich, Kathleen Wiley, the White House looting, you know, when they took the China. I love the fact that he's dredging up all these issues from 20 years ago because younger voters haven't really heard about this, and it makes for great copy. It's exciting.
Right. Now he's playing offense. And, you know, over the years, I know him. Like 5 years ago when he was thinking of running, we wrote a plan for him. At different times during this campaign, he would call me and we'd meet and talk. And,
well,
and I've not worked for the campaign yet. But, yeah, sure, he gets free advice. Extremely smart candidate. But he's, you know, I would say that people, I for those of us who had the privilege of volunteering for Reagan and then going to work for him, if you sent him an ad, it'd be one take, bang. He was the perfect candidate for television. He could deliver an address, talk to the nation, TV ad. He was on stage. He was the right guy for the right time, and people would say, "Oh, he's trained for this. He's an actor." Then I worked for Arnold Schwarzenegger when he ran for governor, and he was an action figure. Where in this historic recall election, he could go out on the stump, blow up Volkswagens. They would play, "We're not going to take it anymore," and he would lead the charge on the recall. And he was the perfect candidate for that race at that time. We're in an age of reality TV, and people really underestimated Trump, because what they're seeing now is he's brought reality TV to the presidential campaign.
Yes.
And all this.
He's so quick.
He had the highest rated reality TV show in the country for the last 5 years. In fact, 5 years ago when he was thinking of running, it came down to that last weekend. He was saying to me, you know, NBC, they were offering me, you know, I was getting paid $5 million episode. They're going to give me $10 million episode. I'm saying, well, you know, it's tough to top. But
being president of the United States tops it.
Yeah, well, it's a huge sacrifice. So at the time, I don't think he thought it was right. But this time, all the energy was on our side. We had 17 candidates running. Every primary was like an episode for the reality TV show in a way. And he was able to survive. And so I tell you, when he debates Hillary, they're talking about him debating Sanders right now. And people want that kind of entertainment. They want that because you don't want boring politics. And the stakes are so high. That poll that we were talking about, 67% of all voters in the United States think the country's headed on the wrong track. And among the undecided,
they're going to go for Trump, right?
You got two-thirds saying that of the undecideds, we're on the wrong track.
Yep.
And we asked them, should we continue the policies of Barack Obama or change and move in a new direction away from the policies of Barack Obama? 56-34, they said change. And the undecideds want change. So there's a hidden vote for Trump. If he can get Hillary into this race as the third term of Barack Obama, which means, you know, a flat economy, more failure, insecurity on national security, Trump can beat her. And that debate, when he debates her, I mean, Romney Obama was the highest since Jimmy Carter Reagan, 60 million people. When Trump debates Hillary, it'll have an international audience. They could sell it on pay-per-view. It'll be huge.
It'll be huge. And you're huge. Thank you, John, for joining us. I'm going to have you back soon, because next time I want you to explain how Trump is going to win the women's vote. Thank you so much for joining us. John McLaughlin, the smartest pollster and public opinion analyst in the nation. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham, your healthy radio addiction. After the break, Heather McDonald and why we should love cops.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Talking about freedom. I'm talking about freedom.
That's right. We're talking about freedom today. It's Freedom Friday. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham. Thank you for staying with us. We're celebrating Decoration Day, now known as Memorial Day, paying tribute to the men and women who have given their lives to make us free. But there's another group we need to celebrate as well, the cops, because they keep us free and safe every day. And I've invited on today a very smart woman, Heather McDonald from the Manhattan Institute. She has just written the latest of many, many thoroughly researched articles. That's her expertise, research, on what is happening to crime in America. And the statistics are astounding, but behind these statistics are real lives and real deaths. Homicides up 180% in Milwaukee over last year. Atlanta, murders up 32% over last year. And the most plausible explanation for this extreme rise in violent crime, homicides, is the intense agitation on the streets of America against police. they have become so intimidated, so handcuffed, so unable to do their jobs that the murderers, the criminals, are taking over the streets. It's going to take a long time to take them back again. And, of course, police officers are supposed to be courteous and respectful. But now they are being held back from doing their jobs. Heather?
Betsy.
Heather McDonald, thank you for joining us. So now we have the expert here to tell us what is happening on the streets of our cities.
Very ugly confrontations between the police and some members of the community, and certainly criminal suspects, Bestie. I've talked to many officers across the country who say that every time they put handcuffs on somebody, they're surrounded by jeering crowds, cursing at them, sometimes throwing things. People have been agitated by the Black Lives Matter movement that holds falsely that the police are the biggest threat facing young black men today. There's been a constant demonization of the police. President Obama constantly says that policing is racist, that the police treat similarly situated blacks and whites differently, which is simply not true. The police go where crime is. The criminal justice system responds to crime, not race. But the hostility that officers are encountering in the streets now is unlike anything they've seen since maybe the 1960s. And the difference today is that the anti-cop animus is embraced not just by the radical fringe of the Weather Underground or the Black Panthers, but is fed by the highest reaches of government and the media as well.
I'm struck by how even when a police officer is attacked by a criminal, even when a criminal wrestles with a police officer, tries to take away the police officer's gun, it's still the police officer who's accused if he or she does anything in response. I'm thinking about this incident in Ferguson where Darren Wilson, the police officer, he was attacked by Michael Brown, who tried to grab his weapon, and yet he was put on the offensive in a court of law.
It's extraordinary. Michael Brown continues to be venerated as a martyr, even though he was a thug.
Heather, stay with us till after the break. I don't want to cut you off, but in a moment, we have a hard break, and I just want to warn you that it's coming, because what you say is so important.
If you resist an officer, and especially if you try to grab his gun, you are putting the officer on notice that you intend to kill him. The police shootings that have been so amplified in the media in the last 2 years, almost all of them have been preceded by somebody resisting arrest. If we want to save black lives, the main thing is to bring black crime down, because that is
the most important statement. Thank you.
Freedom don't come free. I'm an American soldier.
Hello, America. Welcome back. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for the voice of liberty, Laura Ingraham, and we are celebrating Freedom Friday, a very special one, paying tribute to men and women who gave their lives in defense of our freedom. It's Decoration Day, or what Americans now call Memorial Day weekend, times for barbecues and fun, but also for a somber thank you to those who gave it all. I'm going to be talking this segment with Congressman Louie Gohmert from Texas, and I invited him on. He's one of my favorites anyway, but I invited him on because his area of the country, the border with Mexico, is very threatened by the Zika virus. I'm sure you've read something about the Zika virus. It's carried by two species out of the 600 species of mosquitoes, and they're found. This species, the Aegypti mosquito, is found particularly in southern Florida, across the border states, Arizona, Southern California, Texas. And those are the areas that are most vulnerable to the Zika virus. the mosquito bite someone who's carrying the virus, and then within the next couple of days, as the virus moves through the insect system, the mosquito bites someone else and transmit the infection to the newly bitten person. That's how this is spread, also spread through sexual contact, but primarily through these mosquitoes, the Aegypti mosquito, and perhaps also the Albopictus, which is found much farther north, even as far north as New York or San Francisco. But I'm focusing on this because Barack Obama is giving you a false narrative. He's lying to you. Let's be blunt about it. Barack Obama is lying to you about the Zika virus. He has gone to Congress to ask for $1.9 billion, a whopping big amount of money. He says that rapid funding is essential to protect the American people from the Zika virus. Sadly, members of Congress have not actually read his proposal, or they would know that, in fact, over $500 million of this money is being sent to foreign countries at a time when our own local and state public health departments are desperate for money to buy equipment and pay for manpower to destroy these mosquitoes. The only real way to protect Americans from the Zika virus, which causes horrific, horrific birth defects, the only way to protect pregnant women in the United States from this virus is to kill the mosquitoes. And our local and state health departments don't have the capacity anymore to kill those mosquitoes. And yet Barack Obama wants Congress to vote money that he can hand to foreign countries at a time when our own localities are desperate for that money to protect us. I have Congressman Louis Gohmert from Texas on the line. He's a real fighter for freedom. Thank you for joining us, Congressman.
Well, certainly, Betsy. And boy, did you hit it in a nutshell. It is ridiculous. Of course, this is the way it played out when people were fighting DDT. And as a result, there have been millions of people that have lost their lives to malaria instead of killing the mosquitoes that would have prevented it. It's just really unfortunate that people are not letting us prevent it from ever being spread in the first place.
Right. And you are in the hot zone because, according to testimony before the House Science Committee Wednesday, mm-hmm. your areas, Texas, Arizona, Southern right. California, Florida, those are the trouble spots. That's where pregnant women are going to contract this virus locally, not because they went on a trip somewhere, but just simply because they get bitten by a mosquito in their own backyard. They're going to contract this virus, and up to 13% of those pregnant women will tragically give birth to a terribly defective baby, a baby with a brain that is abnormally small and cannot function even in the most basic ways. Those babies will need a lifetime of care.
Well, in his book, Dreams from My Father, he talked about his resentment toward the fat cats from Texas and Louisiana that would come to Indonesia and get whatever they wanted. I would like to think that he's not still harboring that resentment, but it's been very clear in the last 7.5 years, any opportunity he had to try to punish Texas or Louisiana, he took every opportunity. And of course, one of the things he's done is try to keep us from using our power, most of which comes from coal, and keep us from producing the oil and natural gas that really is so good for our country, moving us toward energy independence. But now, for heaven's sake, I hope that he will set all personal feelings of animus toward people in the South that did not vote for him, and let us prevent the disease from even being spread by killing the mosquitoes that will, not only killing the mosquitoes, but also Using a program that will prevent them from being able to breed.
That's right. The OxyTech genetically modified mosquito.
Yeah, exactly.
Very important.
Exactly.
It is so bizarre that he is preventing that.
Very, very important. Yeah, because it's been used successfully, the same type technique with other bugs, and stop the spread of disease through other insects by just stopping their ability to breed.
Imagine that. We have the technology. It kills 90% of those lethal mosquitoes in a few months, and he refuses to let it be used in this country, even though the World Health Organization has urged us to use it.
It is unbelievable. It is just so irresponsible. You just really wonder, if it's not some personal resentment, what is it? Why would you not want to do everything you can to prevent the spread of disease in the United States of America?
Well,
and then, of course, we remember the story about the general going to the UAE and looking around for potential places that the president can live after he leaves office. I mean, we never had a president that looked for a residence outside the United States.
Can you imagine? Well, look at what he's doing.
He's
rebuilding Africa. He sent over billions of dollars of, quote, Ebola money to build a public health infrastructure in Africa. Those African countries got more money to fight Ebola than all the U.S. hospitals in the United States got. Can you imagine that he put that continent ahead of our country?
We've learned to imagine with this president. Yeah,
but let me ask you something.
We have learned to imagine.
Congressman, I have to ask you something. I don't understand. I see the news reports about the House Republicans fighting to make sure that the president's $1.9 billion Zika package or lesser amount is, quote, paid for. But why aren't they making a big issue out of what it's being spent on, not just whether it's paid for, but why should it be spent on other countries when we so desperately need the mosquito control help right here in the U.S.?
You're making a great point, and I expect that because of the discussion about it, there will be fighting about it, trying to stop it in the future. But once it's out the door, that makes it a little bit tough to stop it later.
You haven't voted for it yet.
You
haven't come to an agreement yet. So I'm asking you, because you are a real spokesperson for freedom, will you carry this message back to Congress and tell Paul Ryan and other members of Congress, it's not just whether it's paid for, it's what it's spent on. Take that foreign spending out of that package.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, unequivocally. But you were raising the point with the Ebola money that, we're still sending money to help with some of these issues, and it needs to stop until we get control of what's happening here. But there are other things that we could do to help them, like with things like Boko Haram. And this administration, according to people in Nigeria and other countries, they've been told, look, if you will change your law to allow same-sex marriage and pay for abortion, then we'll give you more help with they won't say radical Islam, but the radical extremists. And I was so proud. There was a Nigerian priest, or actually bishop, that said, look, we're not changing or giving up our religious views, not for you, not for anybody. They're not for sale.
Right.
I'm really proud of some of the stands they've taken over there.
Let me get back to Congress for a second, Congressman. So after the break, you're all coming back, and there's going to be some further negotiation on this Zika package. So my question is, do you think you can get the Republicans in the House of Representatives to push for all of that package to be spent either in Puerto Rico, which is inundated with Zika already, or in the United States, where places like San Antonio, Texas, have no money to eradicate mosquitoes? You know, the health of a pregnant woman, the safety of her unborn child, depends entirely on whether local government has the capacity to destroy these mosquitoes. When the CDC issues an advisory that says dress, drain, and DEET, that's unrealistic. You can still get a mosquito bite on your ankle or your face, even if you have long sleeves on. And to think that the future of your child depends on this.
The true conservatives will be fighting it, but you may have seen that, for example, on the LGBT issue, that it's taken such a front center position. Instead of refraining from violating the Constitution, we had 43 Republicans that voted with all of the Democrats to insert ourselves in an unconstitutional manner to support the position that the extreme left has taken on LGBTQ, they've added, of course.
Right.
So I would like to promise you that the House is going to do the right thing, but we didn't do the right thing just a couple of days ago.
Right. Well, that's a good example,
so,
but here's the issue.
But so I can tell you,
as a woman, I can tell you, as a woman who's now a mother and a grandmother, I can tell you that I am worried about pregnant women in the southern half of the United States.
Of course.
And the advice they're getting about
it's far more important. Yeah, absolutely.
The advice
it's
they're getting about
it's far more important than the LGBT issue. Yes.
Right. And the advice they're getting about dress, drain the water out of their backyards, and put on DEET. That's like telling people to duck and cover in the 1950s and 60s when we were in the Cold War.
Yeah.
It's just government at its worst, misleading people into thinking they're safe when they're not. And it's time to spend the money at home, as Donald Trump would say. It's time to put America in first place.
Yep.
Thank you, Congressman Gohmert. Take that message back to Congress.
We can be gentle. You got it, and you can count on it. We don't know what the rest of the Congress will do, so people need to let their congressmen know they're not going to stand for this kind of garbage that does not protect Americans first.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks, Betsy
McCoy, standing in for Laura Ingraham. This is your Healthy Radio Addiction. After the break, more on protecting our freedom.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Thank you for joining me today. It's Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham. Give us a call, 855-40-LAURA, 855-40-LAURA. We are celebrating and thanking our veterans for their sacrifices in keeping us free. But we're also talking about the Zika virus because federal officials have warned that mosquitoes carrying this virus will start biting and infecting U.S. residents in the coming days. And the trouble spots are among where many of our listeners are, Southern Florida, Southern California, across Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. I'm very concerned about this because many of the communities in that area of the country lack the facilities, the trucks and manpower to destroy these mosquitoes. And President Obama is asking for a whopping $1.9 billion. He says it's for Zika, but he's sending over $500 million of it to other countries when it's urgently needed by our states and counties and towns right here in the U.S. for mosquito eradication. It's the only way we can keep pregnant women and their unborn children in these parts of the country safe. And yet he wants to send the money elsewhere when places like San Antonio, Texas, don't have the capacity to destroy mosquitoes. It's really a betrayal of his oath of office that he is willing to spend this money elsewhere instead of on American safety. And in addition, he's standing in the way of the use of high technology to destroy these mosquitoes effectively in the next few months before this disease becomes endemic in the U.S. the way it is in some parts of South America. So give us a call, 855-40-LAURA, 855-40-LAURA. We've got to put pressure on Congress to stop the president's Zika scam. Otherwise, the money is going to follow that Ebola boondoggle money right out our door and out of our pockets. I'll be back after the break with a great lineup, starting with the all-time most expert supply-side economist in the nation, Larry Kudlow, and, because we're trumping, Sam Clovis, Dr. Sam Clovis, national co-chair of the Trump campaign. Stay with me. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham, your healthy radio addiction.
Radio addiction starts now.
Power to the people!
The Laura Ingraham Show.
I thank God for my life, for the stars and stripes. May freedom forever fly.
May freedom forever fly across this nation. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham, your healthy radio addiction. We are celebrating Freedom Friday. And this more than any other Friday, because we are preparing for one of the most important days of the year, what my grandparents and parents called Decoration Day, when we honor the servicemen and women who gave their lives in defense of our freedom. It's not only a day for barbecues and fun at the beach, it's a solemn reminder that freedom isn't free. It's up to you and me. And, of course, we are trumping. Pretty soon we'll have Sam Clovis on, national co-chair of the Trump campaign, and our favorite economist, the brilliant Larry Kudlow. And I'm going to ask Larry, who's on the line now, to tell us his thoughts about a lot of things. But I'm sure, Larry, that you probably tuned into or later reviewed Trump's energy speech.
Yeah, I did review it. Hi, Betsy. How are you? Thank you for having me on. Happy Memorial Day weekend.
This is the voice of Larry Kudlow, our supply-sider, Reaganite, CNBC host, and preeminent economist. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, I just, before we jump into energy, by the way, I thought it was a very good speech. Very good speech.
Yeah.
Let me just point out to you and the listeners, the GDP report on the economy for first quarter revisions ending in March. I just want to say this. I'm not usually a big pessimist, but I got to tell you, profits were down across the board and business investment was down across the board. Profits are the lifeblood of the economy. Profits are the mother's milk of stocks. And without investment, Betsy, you can't create businesses and jobs and higher wages. I just want to note this. I don't think it's gotten, because it's Friday of Memorial Day weekend. It was a terrible report and underscores once again the need for pro-growth tax and regulatory policies, including a deregulated energy sector. As Trump said yesterday, get government out of the way.
Yes, and of course, a new tax policy that will relieve the burden on businesses, including small businesses where people currently file as individuals, and how about across-the-board deregulation so that, you know, you say it's a pro-growth policy. For me, Larry, take-home pay.
Yeah,
that's
I love
what most people
pay.
Want. Take-home pay, right?
I love that was Reagan's phrase.
Yep.
It holds
home
up pay as well as ever before. Look, this stuff, you know, Trump's not – all these controversies swirling around this presidential race, but when you get down right to the bread and butter of American presidential politics is always the economy. And I just want to note that Trump's tax cuts, as you point out, and I've lived with this now, I endorsed them months and months ago, with a 15% business tax rate down from 35 to 40 for big corporations and small companies, the so-called S-Corps, becomes more and more and more important when you look at the GDP report this morning. Once again, this is the fourth straight quarters. Profits are falling and business investment is falling. This is the guts, the heart, the lifeblood of the economy. And so there should be a great urgency to discuss this in connection with tax and regulatory reduction, because we're not going anywhere. We're threatening recession with these kinds of numbers. And what Trump is trying to do, and even our, some of our wonderful, dear-heart conservative friends don't seem to get this, he is trying to relieve the burdens of recession. He's trying to relieve the burdens of government overreach. And it is so important. Just look at today's numbers.
They are terrible. And as your friend Art Laffer has said many times, if you tax something, you get less of it. That means you get fewer jobs, less income when you raise taxes. And what did Barack Obama do? He raised taxes.
Well, what is Hillary Clinton doing?
That's
the thing.
Right.
This is what I don't get, okay? Look, you're much smarter than I am. You have to explain to me. What is Hillary's economic recovery growth plan? As far as I can tell, putting away the emails and the State Department and lying to the general counsel of the state, put all that stuff aside. What I hear from her is she's going to raise taxes on capital gains, she's going to raise taxes on investment, she's going to raise taxes on large corporations, she's going to raise taxes on successful individuals, she's going to re-regulate the entire economy,
yes.
She's going to put fracking out of business, coal out of business, so that Trump yesterday talked about, guess what, American energy independence. Hillary is American energy dependence on the Saudi Arabians and the Russians. How in hell?
Well, they're donating to the Clinton Foundation.
A recovery plan. Where's
right.
the recovery plan?
There is no recovery
all
plan.
All the other stuff. Where's the recovery plan?
You know,
from
I'm
Hillary
so
Clinton?
Glad. I'm so glad you're mentioning this. And in fact, maybe CNBC can promote a debate just on economic issues. Try to keep the candidates just on that. If Hillary ever becomes the candidate. But here's the issue. She doesn't talk about growth. Look at her
Never.
Website. She talks
Never.
About, quote, fair growth. It's all about resentment. She wants more racial preferences, more gender preferences, more redistribution of wealth, more rules, even in the corporate boardroom, even in the human resources department, to limit how employers can pay their employees, who gets a bonus, who gets overtime. Uncle Sam is going to dictate, or Mrs. Clinton is going to dictate literally everything.
So you have a very clear contrast between Donald Trump, who wants to remove and roll back government power in the economy. I mean, he talked about this yesterday in the energy speech. He couldn't be clearer. And Hillary Clinton, and for that matter Bernie Sanders, who wants to increase government power to direct the economy through tax hikes and also, most particularly, as you know, regulation. Regulation has become the hidden hand of government economic control, and it really doesn't get the credit and attention that it deserves. This is how socialists, big government people, run the economy. They are against the free market. They are against the free market. They are against entrepreneurs. They are against innovators. They are against the technological disruptors. They believe government's heavy hand is smarter than all of us.
And of course, it's the biggest tax of all.
And I just wish people would put it in these stark terms.
It's the biggest tax of all because it prevents businesses from making the smart decision.
Yes,
the decision that will be profitable. Instead, they always have to sacrifice to make the decision that is in compliance with government regulation, and the result is fewer jobs.
Betsy, you and I are not smart enough to operate in the economy. We need government. We need government local.
Right.
We need government state. We need government federal. We're not smart enough, Betsy. We don't run economics departments. We don't have all these advanced degrees.
I'm surprised they let us get dressed in the morning, Larry. Why aren't they in there telling you what tie to wear, what shoes I should put on? That's next.
Right. We don't know what to buy, where to invest, which doctor, which hospital. We don't know any of that stuff, Betsy. You and I have to go back and figure out why we're so dumb and how badly we need Hillary Clinton to tell us what to do.
Well, you know, Hillary Clinton says the government is going to dictate to businesses, quote, far-sighted investments. And if it's not what the government defines as a, quote, far-sighted investment, right, then it gets taxed at a higher rate. Higher capital gains tax rates for investments the government doesn't deem farsighted. Can you imagine?
No. Well,
having
yeah,
to
I
check
imagine.
With Uncle Sam.
You know, I got a book coming out with my pal Brian Dmitrovich a couple months, early September, about John F. Kennedy, who was a free market capitalist who slashed marginal tax rates, hated regulations, and wanted a stable dollar. Now, the government, I mean, the Democratic Party, which has moved so far to the left, it's the Sandinista Party, they have written JFK's economic policies out of their history.
And Bill Clinton's, now, by the way.
So now, I'm going to argue that Trump, with his speeches, and he's going to have a tax and economic speech coming up, but his speeches on energy yesterday again showed he is a market man. He is an incentive guy. He is traditional Ronald Reagan economic growth guy. And this is very important. It has not received enough attention. There are too many sidebar issues swirling around. Peace and prosperity, Betsy. Let's have prosperity at home so we can have peace abroad.
It's so well put, Larry. Before I let you go, I want to ask you about your Facebook column, because what we're talking about here is that the mainstream media are not covering this key issue that Donald Trump's economic policies will produce growth, which means jobs and take-home pay. So what do you think of the meeting with Mark Zuckerberg and the conservatives? Tell me what goes on there.
Well, look, I think that meeting was a de facto admission that the editors at Facebook, who run these topics, the important news topics column, they are editors. It's not just computerized algorithms, and they made mistakes, and they kept conservative news out. Essentially, I looked at that meeting as Zuckerberg saying, yeah, you're right, we're going to have to go back and fix it. I think that's really what came out. Now, will he fix it? I do not know. I hope he does. Lord knows. He has tremendous responsibility with 1.5 billion people using his website every day. But I'm just saying, he wouldn't have had that meeting, Betsy, if he didn't know there was some truth in the conservative charges. Now the question is how to change it.
Right. And of course, helping young people who are glued to the screen understand that there's a bias, that if they want to get both sides, they have to go beyond Facebook.
I'm a Twitter guy. I do my own tweets. I love to do it. In fact, I'm going to tweet this conversation.
That's good. You tweet it. Please, I know you're a patriot. Put out your flag. Say
yes.
Thank you with
yes.
The rest of us. It's great to have you on. Yes,
thank
my
you,
regards
Betsy.
To Judy. Happy Decoration Day. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham. This is your Healthy Radio Addiction. And when we get back, the great Dr. Sam Clovis, co-chairman of the Trump campaign.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Soldiers who fight for this land, we're remembering them this Memorial Day weekend, Decoration Day, my parents and grandparents called it. Welcome back. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham, your Healthy Radio Addiction. Give us a call at 855-40-LAURA, 855-40-LAURA, to salute our veterans or share your views on the news of the day. I have on line 2 Jim from Kentucky. Jim, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, Betsy. You know, I firmly believe that Paul Ryan's problem is not with Donald Trump. It's with Romney. Let me explain. if he backs Donald Trump, he breaks his loyalty with Romney. Until he gets permission from Romney to back Donald Trump, I don't think he's going to do so.
Well, you may be right about that, but it's a pernicious intrusion by Mitt Romney. He had his chance and he blew it.
And, you know, I think it's a shame that he's not taking, this is Romney, not taking the will of the voters first instead of his own. It just totally amazes me, Betsy, how this guy cannot back Romney, I mean, not back Trump, when it's the will of the people.
I so agree.
It doesn't matter what he thinks.
It doesn't matter what he thinks. Trump won this nomination fair and square, and he's giving voice to the convictions of Republicans who have been so disappointed by the wimpy, go-along-to-get-along conduct of so many in Congress. I should think Paul Ryan would seize this opportunity to demonstrate that he is different from John Boehner, that he's different from Mitch McConnell, that he does listen to the American people, and that he's not just going to roll over and be Democratic light. So I'm totally with you on this one, Jim.
Betsy, just think, if he had gone against Obama as much as he's going against Trump, he might be vice president today and Romney might be president.
You're so right.
But the way he's doing it, it's a shame. I mean, you know, I don't think they really care what us voters out here in this country believe and really want from our representatives. The only thing we want them to do is represent us.
Well,
it's that simple.
You are stating the obvious, but that doesn't mean I'm belittling it, because it takes real courage for you to say it. We would not have a $19 trillion debt if members of Congress listened to the American people.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. You know, Betsy, I'll tell you, other than Laura, you're my favorite. I love it when you replace her.
Thank you. Well, I love it when you call in, so please do again. I'm really glad you did. You know, I'm also marveling at the American voter, who so many of them still obviously support Hillary Clinton. This is a politician who is so utterly defined by scandal. As one writer in the Wall Street Journal said, Hillary Clinton has more baggage than the carousels at Dulles Airport. She is just loaded with years and years, decades of scandal. It ought to be disqualifying. But the fact is that voters don't remember, and the Clintons are counting on the forgetfulness of the American people. So I'd like to pay tribute to Donald Trump for reviving some of these issues and reminding the public that the Clintons' scandal goes way back to when Bill Clinton was in public office in Arkansas, way back to his philandering with Jennifer Flowers and Paula Jones and Monica Lewinsky. We're not condemning him. His time is over. We're condemning her for all she did to cover up and go after those women instead of being honest about it. And of course, her attempts, even way back then, to cash in on public service, Filegate, Chinagate, Travelgate, literally stealing the China out of the White House when they left. So kudos to Donald Trump for having the nerve to raise these issues again and remind the public before November that 8 years of Hillary Clinton would be 8 years of real embarrassment. Craig, on line one, let me welcome you and say, we've only got 30 seconds, but if you hold on till after the break, I would love to take your call.
That's fine.
Wonderful. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingram. This is your healthy radio addiction. After the break, the one and only Dr. Sam Clovis.
They'll never take us down. Though some may try, we're gonna stand our ground. It's do or die.
They'll never take us down. In fact, Donald Trump is gonna take us way up. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham. This is your Healthy Radio Addiction. And on this Memorial Day weekend eve, we are trumping. And I'm very happy that in just a moment, we're going to be talking with Dr. Sam Clovis, the national co-chair of the Trump campaign. But first, we have on line one, Craig from Iowa. I promised I'd take Craig's call. And Craig, let me just begin by saying, I love Iowa. Where are you from in Iowa?
Well, I do too. Des Moines area. I grew up in the Quad Cities, and I appreciate you putting me on before a great fellow Iowan. That's Sam Clovis. He's a terrific person. And anyway, my comment is, at this point, I don't really have a problem with Paul Ryan or Jeb Bush or Billy Crystal or any of these people. I shouldn't say Billy Crystal. Bill Crystal not endorsing Donald Trump. But once he is officially the nominee, once it's confirmed at the convention, if they don't come out and back him, I think that we need to just throw him out of the party. Tell him to take off and take a hike.
Well, I'm quite confident that most Republicans and the lion's share of Americans will come behind Trump because he stands for a very clear message: America rising, more jobs, more foreign policy that benefits America rather than the rest of the world, more strength around the world, energy independence, freedom for the health care that we want. So many positions that are very, very important to Americans. So thank you so much for calling in, Craig.
Yes, thanks.
Okay, now it's time to welcome Dr. Sam Clovis. Sam, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks, Betsy. It's always a joy to be on with you.
And, of course, everyone wants to hear your thoughts about that magnificent energy speech that Mr. Trump gave earlier this week. It's getting kudos from literally everyone I hear. So give me your thoughts.
Well, I think it's a fabulous speech. I thought he did a tremendous job, as typical of Mr. Trump and his delivery of a message. Our message is very clear. America is going to be first. America is going to be energy independent. We're going to take a look at all of the above solutions. We're going to be looking after the various industries, and we're going to let the market decide inside our own country what's going to happen. And we're going to create jobs. We're going to create revenue for the federal government. All of these things go to, I think, the most important aspect of this is it's going to put more money in people's pockets. It's going to lift the middle class. It's going to provide, you know, thousands and thousands of jobs. And all of these things are benefits to America. And I think this is really one of the most important aspects of this, Betsy, is the fact that it changes the geopolitical map of the world as well. Because the less dependent we are on foreign oil, the easier it is to balance our trade agreements with other countries, and the more money that stays in the United States. And I think that's critically important.
Yes, and of course, it also underscored the critical difference between Mr. Trump and Hillary Clinton. Her agenda is job destruction. She's going to put the coal industry out of business. She's going to put the fracking industry out of business. Donald Trump's agenda is job creation.
Well, take a look at her tax plans, too. I think that's another area where there's a stark difference. Our tax plan will generate millions and millions of jobs and bring in an incredible amount of revenue and will change the dynamic in this country as far as our budget discipline and those outcomes. And no matter how you score Hillary Clinton's tax plan, it keeps coming up with the loss of millions of jobs. And I don't know how any person can stand up in a straight face and say that her tax plan is what's really best for America after what we've already gone through the last 7.5 years.
Well,
I just can't imagine the American people siding with her on anything, because she's just going to be a continuation of Barack Obama.
Well, in fact, just a few minutes ago, I was chatting right here with Larry Kudlow, the economist, who, of course, has endorsed Donald Trump's tax plan. And Larry was underscoring this, that that nobody could possibly want a continuation of the very, very low growth, the anemic economic performance that we're seeing. And it's the result of high taxes and burdensome regulation that literally destroys the ability of people to invest in their own business.
Well, I think, you know, this is interesting because I had an opportunity a couple of weeks ago to speak at a small business leadership summit in Washington, D.C., with kind of a town hall and with the, you know, the Donald Trump's campaign. I represented Donald Trump's campaign, and someone followed me with the, from the Clinton campaign. And, you know, and it's interesting the feedback that you get oftentimes in these endeavors, that you oftentimes find that the differences are so stark that people have a very difficult time getting their heads around what it is that's being offered by the Democrats and the progressives. And if you think that Hillary Clinton's tax plan is bad, take a look at Bernie Sanders' tax plan. I mean, it's just off the hook. And,
I love the idea. I love the idea of Donald Trump debating Bernie Sanders. I want to see that. I'm going to buy a front row ticket.
Well, I think it would be fascinating, to say the least. And so I do think that it's one of the things that's very important about people. When we go into this election, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, the gut, the issues, the negatives and all this. And I said, look, at the end of the day, this comes down to a choice. You have a choice. And you look at, and I want you to compare and contrast the differences between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton on any issue associated with the livelihood and well-being of American people, and Donald Trump wins hands down. He wins by double digits in almost every area. And so this to me, it makes it very clear that Donald Trump is going to surprise people. This campaign is going to surprise people as we get closer and closer to the November election. And I think we're still a long ways away. And frankly, Betsy, I'm shocked that we caught up with Mrs. Clinton as quickly as we did. I just wasn't anticipating that. You know, in my crystal ball, I was looking at this that maybe we'd catch up around convention time. But we've already caught her in many of the swing states, and I think we're going to start distancing ourselves as we go along here to build a sizable lead that will be almost insurmountable as we go into the general election.
I can hardly wait to see Mrs. Clinton in the rearview mirror. It's going to be great. I was particularly excited when I heard Donald Trump say that he was going to resubmit. He was going to ask TransCanada to resubmit its application for the Keystone Pipeline. That would mean so much development, so much growth in the mid part of our country.
Well, I think, it again, and just to put a plug in there, take a look at who this satisfies. Even though a lot of these are right-to-work states, that where the pipeline will transit, there'll be a tremendous amount of outreach to the private sector unions to come in because of the specialties that they have. You have to remember that when you're pro-growth, you're pro-everything. You're pro-growth for everything. And that means you want to make sure that the labor force is fully engaged, and it doesn't matter whether it's in the private sector or however that manifests itself. You want everybody working, because the more people that are working, it lowers the pressure on our welfare state. It lowers the pressure on food stamps, on TAMP, on all of these other means-tested programs, because you have more and more people with sustenance coming into their homes, and the ability of us to be able to start to clear the backlog of people that are involved in welfare and Medicare, Medicaid, and all of the means-tested programs. This is huge, because the more that the economy grows, the less pressure there is on the welfare state.
Well, it seems that Hillary Clinton really isn't interested in growing the economy. If you look at her economic plan, it's just, she calls it fair growth, which is just a redistribution of the existing level of growth. She just wants to push more of it to minorities, more of it to women, but she's not actually interested in seeing new growth, new jobs. She just wants to cut up the pie differently.
Well, I think you're right, and what's worse is it's not even subtle. I mean, it's total pandering, and the issue is, you go ahead and start to talk to people who come from underrepresented communities or minority communities or areas where there's, you know, pervasive poverty. You start talking to them, they're still in America, among every possible community you can imagine. They're still in America the sense of independence and the sense of wanting to stand on your own feet. There's a lot of pride out there in this country that frankly, progressive policies have gone in to try to destroy those great strengths of America, and that's individual liberty, the traditional nuclear family, the primacy of faith, the voluntary association and community. Because if you have strong communities, and this is going to be the focus of what we're trying to advance in the platform, strengthen our communities, because then the more community activities you have, the less need you have for government. And this mm-hmm. is really an important notion here. And this is something, Betsy, I think a lot of people miss, is this has been a methodical, deliberate, and intentional action on the part of the progressive movement in this country, is to dismantle our communities so that everyone has to be dependent on government.
Oh, yes. It's very distressing. I have to congratulate Mr. Trump on one other aspect of this speech. I loved it when he said he was going to rip up the Paris Climate Agreement, because now we know he's going to rip up the agreement with Iran. He's going to rip up Obamacare. He's going to rip up the Paris Climate Agreement, and he's probably going to rip up the tax code. It sounds great to me, Sam.
Well, I think the issue is you have to remember is what is in the best interest of the American people.
That's
this
right.
This is something that has been missing for the last 40 years since Ronald Reagan. What is in the interest of the American people? That is the focus of this campaign. That will be the focus of the Trump administration, to always, always, always put the American people first.
Well, you
always.
Know, I just wanted to mention, because I know your candidate is in California, Southern California this week. And that's one of the areas that's really being imperiled by this likely Zika virus. And I know that if Donald Trump were president, the money being spent to combat this virus would be spent right here in the U.S. of A., protecting our communities rather than being sent to other countries first.
Well, I agree. And I think that, again, it goes right back to the whole notion is what's in the interest of the American people. You know, we want to fight terrorism as far away from home as possible, and we'll have that. But we also need to think about what happens with this sequence of events where we have people coming into this country illegally, bringing with them untold of and unheard of disease and other aspects of poverty and everything else that comes with that. And so we have to be able to there are reasons for having the policies and the laws that we have. There are reasons for this, because what it does is it's about protecting America. That is the number one, first, and frankly, the only requirement of government is to protect its people, and not to subjugate them, not to enslave them, but to protect them.
Yeah, and of course, this virus is coming across.
We really think we need to do.
This virus is coming across the southern border. There are clinics in Texas that are already caring for. Very sadly, women who are pregnant, infected with Zika, they've come from other countries, and when their children are born here, it's going to cost as much as $10 million to care for each of these babies. It will, of course, be on the American taxpayer.
That's right, because they're American citizens. Once they come here and they're born here, they're American citizens, and they become wards of the state. And it is sad, but that's exactly what's going on.
Very tragic. Well, thank you so much, Sam, for joining us. We are Trumping here, and we're delighted to get this update from you, and we will hope to have you on very often as this campaign progresses and we see Hillary Clinton further and further behind in that rearview mirror. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham. This is your healthy radio addiction.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Americans, what could be better? And here we are on Memorial Day weekend, Decoration Day, as my grandparents called it, celebrating the sacrifices of vets all over the world in defense of our freedom. Thank you, America. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham. This is your healthy radio addiction. Give us a call, 855-40-LAURA, 855-40-LAURA. We have Paul on the line from Florida. Line 5. Paul, thank you for calling.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for taking my call. And happy Memorial Day weekend. I'm a retired Navy personnel, and What I'm doing today, this morning, I'm at Walker Ford in Clearwater, where we're raising the biggest MIA-POW flag to help celebrate our lost veterans.
Oh, that's a great idea. How big is the flag?
Well, I have no idea what size it is, but I know it's supposed to be the biggest one in the United States.
Well, thank you for your service, and also thank you for doing this. I'm putting a whole, I have a big bucket of little flags, which I'm lining my driveway with when I get home today. So it will look very American. Everybody's putting out a flag, I hope, of some sort. But this one sounds particularly interesting. Tell us more about it.
Well, a bunch of veterans got together that buy cars from Walker Ford, and Walker Ford is very well sponsors us veterans and all the different organizations that we do. They sponsor honor flights to go to Washington, D.C. They sponsor a couple of veterans programs where they help house homeless veterans.
Great.
And one of the big people that's involved with this is a guy named Sam Martin that does the Vet Buy program, and he gets involved with a lot of these different things to do with taking care of his veterans, and it's really neat. Right now there's probably about Rolling Thunder is here and a few other organizations to do with veterans. I mean, they're all showing up.
Well, thank you, Paul. I want to thank you for your service. I'd like to thank everyone there who's served our country. This is a very important day, but in fact, every day should be Memorial Day. Thank you so much for calling in. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingram. This is your healthy radio addiction. After the break, Hillary Clinton's crimes.
Radio addiction starts now.
Power to the people!
The Laura Ingram Show.
Thanks for staying with me, Bubba. It's Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingram on this Memorial Day weekend. We're here to thank our veterans for all their services to our country and for the sacrifice made for those who never came back. And my next guest, my favorite guest, Ed Klein, author of Blood Feud, the most fun I've ever had reading a book. And now he has a new book out called Unlikable about guess who? Hillary Clinton, of course. We're going to talk to Ed Klein in just one moment, but I promise to take a call on line two from Linda in Illinois. Linda, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm calling about Louis Gohmert Mansion that 43 Republicans signed with the Democrats on a law a couple of days ago, but I didn't get what they voted on.
Well, I think you're referring to the I'm not sure either, but I'll tell you this. We were talking about the willingness of so many Republicans to sign on to this Zika legislation without reading it. And that's the problem, Linda. They haven't read it, just like Obamacare. They didn't read it before they voted on it. And in this circumstance, they don't realize that a big chunk of this money, which is so urgently needed in this country to destroy these lethal mosquitoes, is instead going to be sent overseas to other countries. That's the problem with this bill. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
And now our guest, the one and only Ed Klein. Thanks for joining me, Ed.
Betsy, what are you and I doing working this weekend? Everybody's off in the the hills or the beaches.
That's a long story, right? But anyway, right. I have so many questions I want to ask you. First of all, the Inspector General's report on Hillary Clinton's conduct at the State Department, it came out this week. It was quite an exposé. Are we any closer to an indictment?
I think this, well, the answer, the simple answer is yes. The more complicated answer, I think, is that what this report clearly showed is that everything that Hillary has been saying up to now to excuse the use of her private email system has been a lie. And that gives a lot of cover to the director of the FBI, James Comey, as he proceeds to put together all his evidence. And hopefully within the next, we all hope, in the next several weeks, makes a referral to the Justice Department to indict Hillary. Because, I mean, as Joe Lewis said, you can run, Joe Lewis, the heavyweight champion, said of Bobby Kahn or whatever his name was, he can run, but he can't hide. And I don't think Hillary can hide any longer.
Mm-hmm. It was really so revealing that every single thing she had said about the use of those emails from the that private server from the day it was discovered turned out to be false.
That's right. But you know what's so none of this should come as a surprise to the American public. When has Hillary told the truth about anything?
No.
I know this sounds like I'm some crazed, you know, right-wing guy who's, but if you look at her record, or going all the way back to
Cattlegate, Whitewater.
Or even Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
This woman, given the choice between telling the truth and telling a lie, virtually every time tells a lie. And it's pathological because she always gets caught. I mean, Donald Trump was right when he said yesterday, she does this all the time and she always gets caught. And now she's gotten caught again.
What's really surprising is that the American people so quickly forget the 20-year trail of scandal that precedes this year's election.
That's right. Well, they forget, but on the other hand, her unfavorable ratings are very, very high. And I think there's a very good chance she may lose the lose California to Bernie Sanders. She'll still get the nomination, but she, I mean, I think Bernie could do an upset in California. And this is a very, not only weak candidate, but in our memory, I don't think there's ever been, and I include George Dukakis in this, a weaker candidate than Hillary Clinton for president because of what you've just said, this 20 or more years, really 30, 35-year long history of lies, deceptions, obfuscations, ducking, you know, trying to redefine the meaning of words and so forth.
What do you think of Donald Trump's proposal to debate Bernie Sanders?
I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it for a lot of reasons. Number one, I think it'll be the greatest thing since the Beatles came to America.
I want a front row ticket.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, as Donald would say, huge.
Huge.
and it's going to do exactly what he, Donald, would like, which is it's going to give Bernie this platform, split the Democrats even further than they're already split, because Hillary ain't going to be there, and it'll be a great spectacle, and it'll, I think, put Bernie over the top in California. Meanwhile, I think Donald can more than hold his own with this 74-year-old socialist. And so it's going to do Donald some good as well.
Yes, it is. Now, tell me, here's another one for you. I always save the tough questions for you. What is your take on Paul Ryan's pussyfooting around about endorsing Trump?
It bothers me a lot. And it bothers me a lot because despite the reasons that he gives, Ryan gives, which is that he doesn't want a false unity. He wants the various factions and parts of the Republican Party to come together and agree on policy. The fact of the matter is Donald Trump is his presidential candidate.
Standard bearer.
His standard bearer. He should be getting behind him. He should be bringing along the Freedom Caucus, which are the conservatives in Congress. Everyone should get behind him because if the alternative is to let the White House get into the hands of the Democrats, right. And of course the Supreme Court as well. So there is no choice really.
Right.
And
this
bothers the heck out of me.
This election isn't a referendum on Donald Trump. It's a choice between Trump and Mrs. Evil.
That's right. There's no two ways about it. So I think he'll come around, but you know, I also think something else. I think that, and I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, but I think Ryan is hiding behind a lot of, quote, principle, unquote, because he himself has his own agenda, which is...
And aspirations.
Exactly, aspirations, which is 2020. If Donald should lose the election, then I'm sure Paul Ryan sees himself as the presidential standard bearer of the Republican Party. And I think this is his kind of fancy way of getting the kind of support from the conservative wing and especially the intellectual wing of the Republican Party, the, you know, the dyed-in-the-wool conservatives on National Review and Weekly Standard and all the other publications that have yet to rally behind Donald.
Well, you know, it's most unattractive. I find it very unattractive, his behavior. That's why I called it pussyfooting. And
well, I think it is unattractive.
Not only that, there are a lot of...
And he's going to eventually have to do it anyway.
He's going to have to do it, but it's harmful what he's doing. And there are a lot of diehard conservatives, true conservatives, who are totally behind Donald Trump. I count myself as one of them.
Mm-hmm.
These Bill Kristol types, they may call themselves conservative, but they're really Washington insiders, and they're looking out for the establishment against the outsider, Donald Trump.
That's correct, because you're absolutely right. And if, as I think it'll happen, Donald becomes president, which I think he's got a very good chance of becoming, he is going to change the nature of the Republican Party. There's no two ways about it. He's going to bring
in... For the better. Yes,
because he's going to bring in a whole huge chunk of the American public that has been held at arm's length by the Republican Party up to now.
That's
these
right, told they gonna, weren't good enough. They weren't good enough. Right.
Exactly. They're all going to flock in, and the Republican Party is going to be the big tent that it always should have been to begin with.
Okay, let's go to fairness for a second, something that rarely occurs in politics. This New York Times hit piece about women and Donald Trump, you know more about women and how they intersect with politics than anybody else. Tell us your take on this piece.
Well, I love this thought that I know more about women. I mean, do you? Betsy, you know me well enough to know I know nothing about women. But I don't think any man knows anything about women. But seriously, no. I think it was about 5,000 words long. It rested on the testimony of women who have since come forward and said, I never said that or meant that. I think Donald is terrific.
I like the very brave Roanne Brewer Lane.
Yeah,
right?
The whole foundation of the piece has collapsed. And once again, you see the New York Times not being the paper of record and the standard bearer of truth that it once claimed to be and often was, but now an arm of the Democratic Party. I mean, even the headlines, I'm going a little bit astray here, but think about it. Not only did they run a piece about Donald and women, which was BS, but then a couple of days later, they ran a front page headline saying that Bernie Sanders was harming the Democratic Party. I mean, that's straight out of Hillary Clinton's playbook.
Right. It hardly belongs on the front page. At best, it's an editorial.
That's right. But I thought that was a shameful piece of work and has been destroyed, by the people who they've quoted. So, but, you know, it doesn't seem to make any difference within the media establishment, the people in Washington and in New York mostly, who are the Bigfoot, Big Feet, the important members of so-called important members of the media establishment, nothing is going to change their view about how they have completely abdicated their responsibility and become mouthpieces of the Democratic Party, because they don't even
they're shameless. They're shameless about it. They don't even hold up the standard or value of journalistic integrity as something they care about anymore.
That's correct. That's right. You know, it was Abe Rosenthal, the executive editor of the New York Times. I may have told you this before. Who I worked with him for 10 years at the New York Times when I was the editor of the New York Times Magazine. He was the executive editor and one of the great editors of his time. He said, I don't care if you cover the circus, just so long as you don't sleep with the elephants.
I have to leave it. But you always have the most provocative, most interesting things to say. I'm going to welcome you back at any time. Please come and visit us often.
I'd love to, Betsy. I'd love to. Thanks
eye-opening.
So much.
Thank you, Ed Klein. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham. This is your Healthy Radio Addiction.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Proud Americans, that's what we are on this Decoration Day weekend. So glad you're still with me. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for the Voice of Liberty, Laura Ingraham. 855-40-LAURA, 855-40-LAURA. Give us a call. Let us know what you're doing for Memorial Day weekend and what you think about this particular holiday. For me, it's a somber time, a serious time, and that's why I have with me Jim Roberts, president of the Americans Veterans Center. He's going to tell us about the largest Memorial Day parade in the nation. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you very much, Betsy. Great to be with you.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you, and thank you for your service in the great writing you did. I'm a big fan.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. First of all, before we even get to the parade, what part of the military were you in? What service?
I'm a Navy veteran, Vietnam era. I did two deployments to the Western Pacific, offshore Vietnam, playing guard duty and gunfire support. So,
well,
Vietnam.
Thank you. I was at a Memorial Day dinner last night in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and a veteran from that period took to the podium, first of all, to just offer an invocation, but then he told us about an experience that literally there wasn't a dry eye in the room. Certainly mine weren't dry. He was a commanding officer, and one of his young enlisted men was literally blown up right next to him. So he grabbed him as best he could in his arms and rushed to the medevac helicopter. And this young boy, just a teenager, lying in his arms, said, "Don't leave me." And then he died, you know. And the message from his commanding officer who stood before us last night was, "I've never left him. I think about him all the time. It's the essence of what we're commemorating this weekend." So now tell us about your parade.
It's interesting that you used the term Decoration Day initially, which was, of course, the original name of Memorial Day. And that comes from the practice of decorating the graves of the war dead.
With flowers.
With flowers, exactly. Mm-hmm. That morphed into Memorial Day. It was a time when there were parades all across the United States. There still are a lot, but many fewer than there used to be. The nation's capital had one traditionally until 1942. At the height of the World War II, the parade was discontinued, and nobody knew why it was never started again, so we decided to revive it in 2005, and so this is the 12th year we've had it. It's grown every year. It's now become a huge event here in Washington with several hundred thousand people showing up. We've got bands and floats, and we honor the dead, the war dead. That's the principal focus of the groups that march. We have several that carry placards with photos of their loved ones who died in combat in the parade. So, as I say, that's the principal focus, but we honor veterans as well. We have hundreds of veterans who are marching in the parade, and then at the end of the parade, we have a large contingent of active duty personnel. So it's a great salute to our military in general.
Oh, boy, I wish I'd known about it sooner. I would come down, but maybe next year. In fact, I'm gonna make sure I get there next year. When I was a kid, I remember Memorial Day, standing on the curb downtown with my dad, holding his hand, watching the parades go by. Just a wonderful, wonderful memory. All kids should have that memory of being there with their parents to salute our nation.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing that I've noted, a number of the celebrities in the parade have commented to me is they are so happy to see the number of parents with families.
That's right.
That's what
I want to thank
about.
You for joining us,
okay.
Jim, and thank you for
you,
your
Betsy.
Service.
Hope
happy
to see you next
Decoration
year.
Day.
Okay, bye-bye.
This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingram, your healthy radio addiction.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Oh, proud to be an American. Absolutely. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingram. This is your healthy radio addiction. 855-40-LAURA, 855-40-LAURA. Give us a call. Tell us what you think of Paul Ryan's pussyfooting around and not endorsing Trump. Or maybe about all that money going to foreign countries instead of fighting mosquitoes here at home when pregnant women are threatened by the Zika virus. There's a lot to talk about, and I want to hear your views. First, on line two from Florida, Craig, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Betsy. You know, we talk about being proud Americans. Well, if we're proud Americans, we need to start taking a stand and protecting this man, Donald Trump. We got these Mexican writers, malcontents, illegals, who hate this country, who hate what Donald Trump stands for. They're out there throwing rocks and bottles and various, setting things on fire, attacking the police, attacking the Trump supporters. And I got a big question for you. We have a ton of motorcycle clubs across this country with thousands and thousands of members throughout each chapter. Some are notorious bikers, and some are just regular people like Rolling Thunder. And if you go online, you'll find that the majority of these guys are Trump supporters. Why aren't they out there forming a barrier between the Trump supporters, Trump, and all these malcontents? And
well, I've got another question for you. I wouldn't actually suggest that the bikers go do it. I don't want them to be beaten up. But our law enforcement personnel should be out there protecting Donald Trump and quelling these illegal protesters. Everyone has a right to express their view. That's the First Amendment. They don't have a right. I'm just going to say that. Exactly. I agree with you completely. They don't have a right to throw rocks or bottles or to silence the person who's speaking. The First Amendment rights belong to the speaker, not to the rioters. So thank you so much for your call. We now have on the line one of my favorite people, even though he's not a Trumper. I have to tell you right up front, he's not with us on Donald Trump, but he's written such a great column, which he often does. This is John Fund from the National Review, and he has written a column called A Case for Putting, quote, None of the Above on the Ballot. Welcome, John.
Well, since the revelations about Hillary Clinton's email surfaced on Wednesday, the case for none of the above would be a lot stronger. Look, I certainly agree with your previous caller that we need law enforcement to vigorously protect people from anyone who is trying to disrupt rallies. But just to make you understand how this happens, Betsy, if something is outdoors, the police are the primary responsibility there. If something is held indoors in a private arena, the primary responsibility for the security rests with the people who host the event, which would be the Trump Organization and, you know, their multi-million-dollar budget. So at times, I think the Trump people haven't anticipated properly the security needs, and I hope they do so in the future, because if it's held indoors, they're the first line of defense, and only if something really serious happens are the police supposed to step in.
Right. Well, I just deplore the way these anti-Trump people are behaving. It's really, it's just despicable.
Well, a lot of these anti-Trump people are being ginned up by Hillary and Bernie Sanders.
Right.
And I think the Hillary people, for example, have a lot more things to worry about, namely this email scandal.
Yes,
this
I really want to hear about this. You have followed this like nobody else. You are the expert. And I asked Ed Klein earlier about his thoughts on the Inspector General report that was released earlier this week, Inspector General for the State Department, showing that everything Hillary Clinton has said about her private server and her emails since she took office have been lies.
Well, the left is starting to wake up that they are dealing with someone who has not been honest with them. For 15 months, she has said the State Department approved of my actions. And now we have the Inspector General report saying, no, we didn't. There's a reason Hillary Clinton was able to get away with this. She personally made certain there was not a permanent inspector general in her department the entire 4 years she was there. There was only an acting inspector general she could have fired at any moment who was completely beholden to her. That's how this happened. Now, she also claims,
but who's
well, I'm available.
Let's pursue that for a second. After she left office, was a permanent inspector
yes.
general. Aha. So now we have someone who is independent.
And that's the person who conducted this investigation.
Great. Well, kudos to him or her. Who was it?
Steve Lilix is his name,
uh-huh.
and he has a very good reputation. But she did not want someone in that job while she was in her job because she didn't want any scrutiny.
And tellingly, she and her staff refused to cooperate with the inspector general. How's that for indicating guilt?
Well, there are 26 Clinton aides that were asked by the inspector general to give testimony or to be interviewed. Only five agreed. Al Hunt, who's a liberal.
Are they still alive?
We'll have to check. Al Hunt, who's a liberal, says this tells you a lot about the kind of people Hillary Clinton would bring into a White House. She'd bring in toadies, she'd bring in enablers, she'd bring in people who will avoid investigations, who will basically protect her rather than follow the rule of law and answer legitimate questions. This simply her tenure at the State Department is now revealed as the dress rehearsal for what would be a disastrous Nixon-like Stonewall presidency if she were elected.
Lawlessness, total lawlessness inside the White House. That's what it would be.
Her motto would be the rule of law in complex times has proved itself deficient. We much prefer the rule of Killery. It's vastly more efficient.
Killery. Did you say Killery?
I did not. You're trying to get me in trouble. No, you're not going to get me there.
I thought I heard Killery. I'm sorry, you said Hillary,
right? I think the Democrats are making a plan B, which is if the FBI report comes out in a few weeks, and of course it will leak, if it's really devastating and if her poll numbers start taking a plunge, they will try to, starting with the superdelegates, find a way to sweep her aside, sweep Bernie Sanders aside because they don't think he can win, and try to install Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren as the Democratic ticket.
That's why Elizabeth Warren hasn't endorsed, correct? You think so?
Well, also, she's had private meetings with Joe Biden in the past. She's mm-hmm. also been very much in the news as the attack dog against Donald Trump.
Right.
It's interesting that a singular United States senator is so much in the national news attacking Donald Trump. I think it's because she's auditioning for a role, perhaps, in the fall.
Right. The typical vice presidential candidate role is to attack the presidential nominee of the other party.
Exactly.
Now, what about Paul Ryan? His dancing around the issue of endorsing Donald Trump, when other than Ryan and a few, stick in the muds like Bill Kristol, Republicans are coming on board. So what is this with Paul Ryan?
Well, I think with a lot of people dealing with Donald Trump, you would like to have a negotiation so that, you know, the art of the deal is all about one side gives up something, the other side gives up something.
So what does Paul Ryan want from Donald Trump?
Well, Paul Ryan does not want the behavior that Donald Trump exhibits in New Mexico, where he goes into New Mexico, and because the sitting Republican governor, Susana Martinez, will not meet with him at a time and place of his choosing, he goes out and attacks her, attacks Hispanics, accuses her of being corrupt. And she's the chair of the Republican Governors Association. If you're trying to win Hispanic voters, Susana Martinez is the highest-ranking Republican Hispanic official in the country. She's run a very conservative administration. It's rare for a Republican to get elected in New Mexico. Donald Trump has to recognize, once you become the Republican nominee, you can't just be a reality TV show guy holding giant rallies. Uh-huh. There's some responsibility there. Can you justify his attack on Susana Martinez in New Mexico?
You know,
I don't think you can.
I haven't looked into it, but what you're saying...
It's horrible.
What you're saying deserves some consideration.
So
I have
if Donald
to tell
Trump
you,
wants to have unqualified support, and he should deserve that as the Republican nominee, he has to change his act. He is no longer the wild man running for the Republican nomination. If he's going to be the Republican nominee, there has to be a sense of responsibility. And if he's going to win, he's going to need female and Hispanic voters, because you can't drive his negatives much higher with those groups. He's got to start changing his approach.
He's going to start getting a lot more female voters because of the conduct of the Obama administration,
But you know, it would help if he actually also adjusted his own perspective and recognized
Did you watch the energy speech that he gave this week?
Yes, it was very effective, and that's the good Donald Trump.
It was extremely effective and thoughtful.
It was an extremely good energy speech, but Donald Trump has to recognize, if you're running for the White House, you have to have good days, and if you're behind in the polls, as he is, you have to have good days
every
day.
He's not behind anymore.
If you go to the average at pollster.com, if you go to the average of all of the polls, you will find he still trails Hillary Clinton. You cannot cherry pick these. You have to look at the average of all the polls. I know what you're doing.
I
know what you're doing, and you're looking at only Real Clear Politics. You got to look at the average of all the polls. Don't pull this on me.
I'm not pulling anything. I'd love to have
you. I'm teasing you.
This is a love fest between the anti-Trumper and the pro-Trumper.
You have got to reach out to groups
and
not insult them, and certainly not go after Republican governors of your own party.
Okay, but I love this column you wrote, None of the Above. I remember about 30 years ago, maybe, Russell Baker wrote something similar, because so many voters were, at that point, also unhappy with the choice. But we're not going to have None of the Above on the ballot, so... To me, it seems clearer and clearer that if Americans want jobs, if they want energy independence, if they want better take-home pay, if they want freedom from an overreaching, oppressive regulatory state, and if they want America to have a prominent place in the world as a leader again, they're going to go for Donald Trump.
I think it's very clear that I'm not in favor of Bill Kristol and his merry band of, I think, irrelevancies, who want to find some guy to put on the ballot to siphon off enough votes to elect Hillary Clinton to be president. I certainly understand.
Gary Johnson, what do you think of him?
Well, I think Gary Johnson is a fine guy, but a vote for Gary Johnson is a vote for Gary Johnson, and it's a vote that basically for Hillary Clinton.
That's
indirectly.
That's what I meant. I like Gary Johnson as a person, too. He seems just
fine. The point is,
governor of New Mexico.
Only one person gets to win, and only one person takes the oath of office. Now, if some people want to make a statement and vote for a third-party candidate, it's a free country. But as a practical matter, by voting for a third-party candidate, you are enabling or helping one of the other two major candidates. And people should realize that. Having said that, you know, Donald Trump could make it easier for people not to go third-party, not to stay home. The biggest problem Donald Trump has isn't Hillary Clinton. It's people staying home because he doesn't act, quote, presidential, unquote.
Yes.
Now, a lot of his supporters don't care if he acts presidential, but independent voters, moderate Republicans, people in suburbs, they do care if someone is presidential, and Donald Trump has to start recognizing that.
Right.
He does some days. He's got to recognize it every day.
I would agree with that. And by the way, we know that acting presidential isn't enough, however, when you look at what happened to Mitt Romney. He lost. He lost big because not enough Republicans came out to vote for him.
Mitt Romney didn't act presidential. He acted like a statue.
That's a good point. So in closing this segment, let me just ask you, what do you think about Mitt Romney now? Has he disgraced himself?
No, I think Mitt Romney is suffering from what I call Trump envy. And you can characterize that in any way you wish. I think he is consumed with envy that Donald Trump is attracting crowds and support that he never attracted because he was so stiff and uninspiring. And I think he's a lot of this is psychological. I just hope that in the end, Mitt Romney doesn't listen to the siren calls of Bill Kristol and run as an independent, because it's not going to solve anything. In fact, it will probably elect Hillary Clinton president.
That's right.
And by the way, or Joe Biden, if I'm right, that the Hillary, of course, doesn't survive the FBI primary.
Well, so we're going to stay tuned to another segment soon with John Fund, because you always have the latest and best information. Thank you so much, John, for joining us. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for the voice of liberty, Laura Ingram, your healthy radio addiction. After the break, some closing thoughts about vets.
The Laura Ingram Show.
The Battle Hymn of the Republic, my favorite song. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingram. This is your healthy radio addiction. And as we close the show, we have a call from someone who'd like to remember the service of our veterans.
Hello?
Yes. Tell me what's on your mind.
This is Steve in Chicago.
Thanks, Steve. Tell us what's on your mind.
Well, 14 of us are going from Chicago to Milwaukee tomorrow. And my Uncle Jack, my father, my Uncle Chuck, and my Uncle Bert are all buried together at the cemetery in Milwaukee.
Oh, I'm so glad you're going to pay tribute to them.
We go every year. And I want to tell you one more thing, Betsy. Please, can I tell you this? I was in Harrison, New York, and I saw you in a parking lot of the Chico's.
Yeah.
And I wanted to come up and thank you for all your healthcare strategy and exposing it. And I was afraid to approach you.
Oh, never be afraid. And let me tell you, Steve, thank you. Thank you for your sentiments today. Thank you for going to Milwaukee to remember those four vets. Thank you for their service. They gave on behalf of your whole family. And this is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingram to say thank you for all the veterans in our country and for all the families in this country who lost sons and daughters, husbands or wives, sisters or brothers in defense of this nation, once more showing that freedom isn't free. No, it's up to you and me. Thank you.
In love you.